Welcome to Blondie and the Brit, Writing, Publishing, and Beyond. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com. Welcome to Blondie and the Brit podcast. I am Blondie, KJ Waters.
And I'm Suzanne Cowman, I'm the Brit.
And together we're Blondie and the Brit.
Yay!
Woohoo! I am the author of Stealing Time.
And I'm the author of The Rejected Writer's Book Club. Today we welcome to the show Sean Fletcher. Sean Fletcher was born in Texas and he graduated with a BS in Wildlife Biology and currently lives here on Whidbey Island where I live in Washington State. He is the author of I Am Phantom series as well as a sci-fi adventure trilogy In the Depths of Darkness. He has taught writing classes at the Pacific Northwest Writing Association's conference, writing groups, libraries, and writing workshops. He is also an agent. Welcome, Sean.
Hey, great to be on here.
Now, did you want me to tell people you were an agent? It wasn't on your bio, so I wasn't sure whether you had two separate bios or whether you just didn't tell people it was like undercover agent, you know?
Undercover agent.
I kind of keep the agent and the editor a little separate from the author, but I don't think it really matters too much. So
you're an agent, right? It's not like an undercover thing.
Yeah.
You age on a t-shirt and you rip open a shirt and there it is.
Yeah, exactly. It just keeps the crowds away, you know.
So just check it. So anyway, Sean, I know that you first started out, you considered being working with animals, maybe a vet, and now you're an author and an agent. That's such a big jump, sort of switch. Tell us a little bit about that journey.
Well, I'm still kind of trying to figure it out myself. Actually, my parents, I was talking to them last week and they asked me, you know, how did it even come about? And I tried to explain, and I couldn't really. So yeah, I started out with the BS in wildlife biology. I was originally a pre-veterinary medicine student for 2 years in college, and just halfway through, didn't really feel like I wanted to do that. I didn't really know what I wanted, like a lot of kids in college. And so I switched to wildlife biology because at least that way I could kind of travel around and still work with animals. I'd been writing since 14 or 15, and I've been writing books since then, and it just was always more than a passion. It was just, it was a passion, but it was just something I kind of hesitantly hoped I could do something with. And then in college, when I was just kind of looking at, after I graduated, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know where I was going. I just thought, you know, why not take this risk? Why not take a leap? And I was working, I love telling the story because it's so improbable. I was working on a ranch out in Wyoming and there was no internet out there. No cell service. So I'd have to go into town about a half hour away to use the internet at McDonald's. And I was just like trying to figure out what I was doing. And so on a whim, I searched literary agency internships because I knew enough to know that that was kind of a foray into publishing. And that would be kind of a step towards realizing this dream. And I stumbled across an internship with Andrew Hurst & Associates, and for some reason, she ended up picking me. She says it's because I wrote so many books, but I think it was just dumb luck. But I was so fortunate enough to get that opportunity. Came out here and kind of went from there. So I've just been pursuing that ever since, and I'm glad I took that risk, you know, that opportunity.
That's pretty exciting.
Wow, that's an amazing story.
Yeah. How long ago was that?
That was at the end of, so I graduated in May of 2014. I worked for about 4 months on the ranch. And then I think in September of 2014, I came up here and I started the internship. And wow. Then that turned into a job about a little over 6 months after that. I can't remember exactly when. But then, yeah, so that's when it kind of shifted.
So from ranching to literary agent, I bet there's not a lot of people out there that can say that.
And I just love this idea of you being in Wyoming, because I've been to Wyoming. It's really windy and there's nothing there.
There's nothing.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's wind, you know, you've got your cowboy hat on. I don't know if that's what you look. This is how I'm seeing you in my head. You kind of stumble in your Spurs into McDonald's.
Spurs.
And the next thing I'm like, I mean, that's kind of how, I guess that isn't anything.
I don't wear a cowboy hat.
He's got a baseball cap.
I just say, well, it's almost like a story in itself. It's like, that could be a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm sure there are other more drastic changes than that, but that's kind of where I came from. So
that's cool.
And I know Andrea loves working with you. And was it a good change for you? Was agent for what you thought it would be? I mean, have you enjoyed that?
I have. Yeah. No, I came in knowing almost nothing about the business. I was kind of an outsider all through school as far as the English world and the writing world because I was a science major. And I never had time in high school, you know, with athletics and my curriculum and all that to do a creative writing class. And in college, I was never allowed into the creative writing classes because of my major. So it was always kind of this distant, you know, far off star that I could never quite reach. And so I read as much as I could about, every writing book I could get my hands on. I kind of had a basic understanding of what the publishing and agenting industry was, but before going into that internship, or after I went into the internship, I just learned so much more about, you know, the ins and the outs and how things, you know, really work and what the industry is really like. And yeah, it really shifted my perception and wasn't quite what I had expected. And others just delivered tenfold in what I thought and what I learned. And it was great. I went in more with a focus on the editing side. And I mean, obviously I still agent and I do agent, but I went in more with the editing focus. And that was just, it's been incredible learning all that kind of stuff.
That's cool. What is something that really shocked you that you didn't think it was, like, you had this perception of agenting and the whole industry is one way and it was so different?
I think probably just the difficulty of even, you know, I thought once I got an agent as an author, I thought once I got an agent, that was it. I was set. And I just learned that there is so much more that goes into getting a book published. And even when you get a book published with a traditional publisher, that's just beginning. You know, you've got so much more of the process you still have to go through. And Suzanne, and I'm sure with going with Lake Union, you've dealt with that a little bit. And it's just, I'd never looked beyond that. I'd never looked beyond getting a book published. I just thought I'd get it published, it'd become a bestseller, and, you know, yay, everything's good. But that's not exactly what happens.
No, you still have to work just as hard.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless your name's Stephen King or something like that. But yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. I work just as hard as I did with my indie book as I do with my published book, which is interesting.
Right.
So I think a lot of people think the agent sort of publishing world is the easy route. Like, if I get there, someone's going to do all that for me. And there is some of that that goes on. But the reality is you still have to do as much work, I think, as an indie. So, you know, that is what people don't realize, you know.
It's just a different capacity of work. You know, you're still doing the same things, but just in a different way.
So tell us, as far as agenting versus an author, do you prefer one over the other, or do they compensate each other? What do you prefer?
Well, I don't do a whole lot of agenting. I do more of the editing, but the developmental editing side.
Oh, do you like that? I love development editing.
I love editing. Yeah, I love just being able to help an author just get a book as good as it possibly can be. But as far as like how they both contrast and compare to each other, I mean, writing has always been my passion ever since I started. And so that will always, I think, be kind of forefront of my mind. But the agenting and the editing are just, they're just a component of that. They help and they give me a great perception. They give me a great foundation to learn from. And I've learned a lot about, you know, that I use in my writing and what I see when I edit and what I've learned from editing that I can't apply to my writing. So they're just kind of one and the same almost. It's good to look at, when I look at a book now, when I'm writing, I look at it from both an agenting as a marketing standpoint and like what the market is, and an editing like structure and flow and pacing and character. And so they both help in their own way.
So you're wearing both hats when you're writing, in a sense.
Yeah. Well, not when I write first draft, but yeah, when I go back and edit. Yes, absolutely.
So that actually leads us nicely into the next question. What are you seeing in the market right now? What is important in books, and what is important, you know, for people who are thinking about looking for an agent that you've seen? You're a millennium, you're coming up. So much has changed in publishing over the last 10 years.
Yeah. A lot of people will say, we know exactly what's coming next. And, you know, there's the wave of dystopian and then, you know, vampires and then, you know, Harry Potter and all these, there's these different waves and these different flagship books that kind of lead the way. I don't think anybody really knows what's going to come next. I think there are pretty solid categories in each genre that are kind of staying the same, like in, you know, middle grade fantasy has always been big. And then YA romance has always been big. And it always, I think, will be. I think above all, the best thing that somebody can do when looking at the market is just have a good book and have like a solid book, because I know, especially from the self-publishing standpoint, it's sometimes hard to stand out because there's just so many books out there, and there's so many, just such a high number, and it's hard to make yours kind of, well, like I said, stand out. And I think the one of the best things that's going to do that is just to take your time to learn the craft and write a truly solid, strong book. And I think that works just as well for self-publishing as it is for getting an agent, because at the end of the day, an agent is just going to be looking for a good story that is going to draw people in.
Yeah, that's so true. I totally agree. And how much, with you, when you're agenting, how much are you drawn in by a good story versus, I think I can sell this? Or is it like a combination of the two? You kind of
it's a combination of two. I mean, as an agent, it's different. You know, I have a different aspect when I'm looking at it as an agent versus, you know, an author or whatever. But as an agent, our first thing is, can we sell this? Can we sell this? Where can we sell this? What are the chances of us selling this? And then beyond that, yes, the writing has to be really strong. And then, and of course, the agency I work at, we don't, you know, do a lot of agenting hardly at all anymore. And so what we also look at is, we really have to have, is this a strong story? Is this going to really draw it in? Because we've spoken with editors at publishing houses and what they're looking for and what they want to see. And yeah, so past where we can sell it and what we can sell, then but can we just not put this book down? And that's really what it comes down to.
All right. So Sean, you are just about to publish your very first book in the Depths of Darkness series. Can you tell us a little bit about the book? And then I want to hear more about how you're launching it.
Okay. The book itself, I started writing last year. I think the very end of last year, I had no intention of writing anything science fiction. I kind of have a running list of novel ideas on my computer and in my head. And I'm just kind of thinking, I'm going to do this one and this one and this one after that. And this one kind of just fit itself in. And It took me a while to come up with the world and whatever, but I finished it beginning of this year. But I waited. I wanted to wait for... the reason why I wanted to wait is in self-publishing, especially when you're doing a series, it's always good to have kind of books in the wings. So when you launch one, you can pretty quickly after that launch the next and launch the next. And so after that, I really took my time with this book. I learned a lot from it. It's my best to date. I mean, now it's been almost a year after, so I've learned a lot more since then too, but it was my best to date. So I really took the time to edit that. But then I went right into writing the next one in the series. And then I finished that one. And now I've actually started writing the third one in that series. So I'll have kind of all of those ready and raring to go.
That's brilliant. I wanted to do that with my own stuff, but I was so impatient because it took me 10 years to get the first one out. So it's like, the mind-blowing. I'm like, I'll never, ever publish if I don't get this one out. I definitely had that thought. And so I think that's brilliant. And the fact that you're writing them quickly and you've got it all fresh in your mind, you don't have to reintroduce yourself to the characters. I think there's a lot of advantages to that. That's great. So give us an idea of what the series is about and maybe teaser on the first book.
Okay. The series overall for the first book is basically about this kid who's been blackmailed into, it's in the future, 2119. There's a Earth Alliance that protects Earth from, you know, the surrounding aliens and bad things in the galaxy, but they're also in a pretty oppressive rulers, and they blackmail this kid into joining their army. But what he doesn't realize is he's actually a test subject for this advanced neural chip that turns him into super soldier if they survive.
Oh, wow.
And if they do manage to survive, then they're going to be kind of the spearhead for the Earth Alliance's galactic domination. And from there, it just kind of gets out of hand. They manage to escape and everything sort of falls apart. They're kind of the most wanted in the galaxy. Everybody's after them because everybody wants that chip.
I was going to say, you have a really incredible cover. I have to say, someone revealed about 3 months ago and scared me to death. It's a brilliant. I mean, what I mean by scared me to death, it's not a scary cover, but the intensity of you've got a picture like a face on the front, right, with a guy's face.
Yeah.
It's really, the eyes are very intense. I mean, it is a very intense cover. And tell us how you came up. Because honestly, I said to you, I'm not even going to put it on my bedside because I'm scared I'll wake up in the night and see it. Spit at me.
Wake up in the night and my eyes just glowing, glaring at you. Well, I worked with a really great cover designer named Natasha Brown. She has done covers for Andrea, or she did her Always With You cover, and she's done covers for a couple of authors I know. And as far as the idea, I'm not very graphically inclined as far as like, oh, I think that would be cool in my mind, but then actually making it realistic or making it a reality is a little bit different. So I had ideas about what I wanted the cover to look like, and she just obviously brought them out into fruition and did an incredible job doing it. And I couldn't be happier with it. I'm already thinking about, you know, what is the second one going to look like? What is the third one? And just obviously with covers, you're trying to brand each one for the series, but I wanted to kind of capture that intensity and that darkness. Cause the book, I mean, the main character's got a humorous voice, kind of, I guess, cynical voice almost, And the series has some light moments, but there is a lot of heavy, you know, dark stuff in there, obviously. Oh,
there's a chip in the poor guy's brain, for goodness sake.
Yeah. So, yeah, I wanted to capture that, and I think it did very well. I'm extremely happy with the cover, how it came out.
And as we know, a cover is what often sells a book. I mean, you know, it's you.
Yeah, so draws you in.
It's really important to get that right.
And as you're talking about the storyline, I want to know who you think is the actor for that. You know, I think of like Total Recall and Arnold Schwarzenegger and, you know, some of these, the Guardians of the Galaxy. And, you know, who do you have in mind as you're writing this? Or is it just kind of more part of you or something? How did you do that?
Oh, as far as the main character?
Yeah. Like if this were turned into a movie, do you, like, you know, when I'm writing it, I kind of had certain people in mind, not necessarily for every character, but.
Mm-hmm. I honestly, whenever I have characters and I mean, the one question I don't ever like getting asked is, where do your ideas come from? Because I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know
where
a lot of the ideas come from. I think they're just a collective consciousness of all the experiences in my life and all the books I've read and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
As far as the character, I don't have one actor in mind. I know the series itself is, I kind of compare it to Ender's Game meets Firefly, but it also kind of has a space fantasy feel like Star Wars. It's not a hard science fiction like The Martian. It's more of kind of a science fiction action adventure. And as far as an act, so kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
I don't think Chris Pratt would be the best or my first choice. I'm not entirely sure who would.
He's not cynical enough, maybe. He's more.
He's not. No. No, because the main character, I mean, he grew up on the streets as in a gang. He is not the nicest guy. I mean, he's a good person, but he's not the nicest guy. And so I don't know who would play that, honestly.
Well, hopefully someone will come forward when you go to make the movie. They'll figure that out.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's exciting. Okay, so now you've got your first book ready to launch. Your second and third are in queue. What are you doing for your book launch? What kind of things are you working on?
So you could say the book launch preparation started when I first started writing this book. Back when I first launched Phantom, I had very little platform, as most beginner authors do. I had, you know, a very small Facebook, I still have a pretty small Twitter, but for the last year, I've been building that up. I've been building Facebook followers. I've been building a mailing list, which I think is very vital for a book launch, and getting all that together. And then, yes, so I got the first book. I got the second one is in editing, you know, having beta readers and editors look at it right now. I've got that third one started so I can stagger the launches. So that's kind of one part of my launch plan. I'm going to be launching one in December, then one of May of next year to kind of keep the momentum going. And then one in December of next year to keep that going. As far as the launch date itself, what I've kind of learned by looking at other authors and the way they do it, and I've never tried this method before, but I've never done kind of, I guess, a true book launch, because even with Phantom, I had no idea what I was doing. But what I'm doing now is I have bought ads and staggered them as well. So day one, I bought a small ad. Day two, I bought a slightly bigger ad. Day three, a bigger ad. Day four, you know, on and on for a week. And what that's going to do is, if you look at the sales, what it's hopefully going to do is you're going to see this bell, like this curve, this slowly increasing curve of sales. And what Amazon likes to see, they like to see that. And when Amazon sees that, then they're going to start putting your book out in front of more people in order to sell it more. That's kind of the end goal.
That's brilliant.
So I use the ads, I use my mailing list, I use social media to kind of get it up there. I also am going to price the book at 99 cents for a week when it first launches to get kind of the most sales possible. And then it's going to kind of create this scarcity effect of, it's 99 cents these days only. So grab it now.
Get it now. Yeah.
And
that's good. Urgency.
After that, it's going to go back to full price.
That's good.
Much, so.
Now, when you say you're taking out ads, where?
I was about to ask the same question.
Same ideas.
So I work with somebody who's a really great marketer. Suzanne, you might know her, Rebecca Barris.
Oh, I might just know her a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. She's extremely good at what she does, and she helped me out picking ads. I can't really think of all of them off the top of my head. I know one is Fussy Librarian, Ebook Hounds, Book Sends, Many Books, Bargain Booksy, Books Butterfly, I think, is another one.
Mm-hmm.
They're ads I think everybody has heard of before, as far in the, you know, in the self-publishing
community.
And so I just use those, and it was a real struggle to get those ads bought without a book actually up on Amazon, because, you know, they want the ASIN and they want the live link. And so I had to promise them, you know, like, let me buy them and I will get you the link, I promise.
Wow. And so, that worked?
It did work. It was, like I said, like wrangling cats, but it did work.
Good. That's really smart, though. I love the concept, though. You're kind of building, you know how Amazon works. You're building towards the models they like to see to put your ranking higher and to, you know, like you said, they put you then out in front of other readers and stuff. So it's a great way to learn that. I'm like, I'm thinking my book will hopefully launch in next spring. So like every author I talk to, I take these little notes and I come back to that. So that's definitely something I'd consider.
Well, I've never done this one before, but I hope it works. So we will see.
My belief is with Amazon, and I'm trying to share with our listeners that my belief with Amazon is exactly what you're saying. If they see something building, and that also puts your ranking up. Like if you suddenly sell like 500 on one day and then you sell one the next day, that doesn't do much. You'll get a spike in your ranking and all that kind of thing. But if they see this building, that's when they push the book. That's when they, you know, that's when you really see your book moving. Right? That's how I believe it works.
They don't want to see, if they see a spike in sales, that's an anomaly to them. That doesn't matter. What they want to see is consistent building sales, which shows that it's got buying power over, the long run. I will say though, I mean, and I don't know how my book is going to be received, but it goes back to this kind of marketing tactic is kind of being used a lot by people who they just pump books out one after the other, month after month, like one a month pretty much, and just use the marketing to kind of get their sales up. But I just want to reiterate that it's really, you got to write a good book.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't know how mine's going to be received, but that we have seen that the quality of the book does make a big difference of how long the book will stay up by itself. And what we're trying to get is we're trying to get to a point where you're not having to continuously run ads. I know authors who they put like $2,000-$3,000 a month into Facebook ads to keep their book up where it is. But I've seen other authors who barely put any money in, but their book is organically being sold because of how good it is. And just people can't stop picking it up. So I think having a good quality book is paramount above all else.
No, I think that's true. Yeah, because I mean, especially with a series, they like that they're going to come to the next one. If they buy it just because the cover looks good and they're into the hype or whatever of your marketing, it's not going to sustain itself.
No. I mean, they might pick it up initially, but it'll come back to bite you
at
the end. So
absolutely. Unless you're finding a whole bunch of new suckers, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
New suckers. Are you getting reviews ahead of time, or are you waiting until it launches?
I should have mentioned that's part of the marketing plan is I think the 15th or 16th of this month, I'm going to I'm going to send out an announcement for ARC reviews. Anybody, like the first 25, 30 people who want to review it early are going to get a free copy of the book. And I have a couple of people who are going to be reviewing it. So yeah, I do try to get some early reviews. I still have a relatively smallish platform, and that's going to hopefully change, once this series gets launched. And so with each successive book, I think it'll be easier to get those pre-release reviews and that sort of thing.
Yeah. You'll have fans that are already into the series. They'll be begging you to the next one, which makes it a lot easier. But it's still a really good strategy. You need to have that first couple of reviews up, because if someone reviews it and they're the first person and it's a negative, it's giant ding. So very good strategy. Well, good. So is there something that you've discovered on social media in particular that drives traffic to your books, or is this something you're still kind of toying around with?
That's more something I'm still kind of toying around with. I'm still learning, how to be really good at social media, I guess, if that's possible. And so I'm really focusing on Facebook just because I like using Facebook. I think it's a fun way to reach authors. But I don't use and I don't see social media really as a way to drive traffic so much for me personally. That's what I use the mailing list for. Those are people who want my books in particular. But as far as social media, that's just for me to show kind of my personality, kind of get a little bit of news out about my books. Like on Facebook right now, I'm leading up to the launch of the book. I'm doing, rocket launch themes, so space themes. And so fun facts and trivia and stuff about space and about starships and that sort of thing.
Right.
And that's just to get, to have fun, to engage people. But I don't know if it's going to really draw anybody to the book itself.
Are you using hashtags with that?
I am not, actually. I'm talking about still kind of figuring this out.
Yeah, so. That would actually definitely help bring, we were talking to, was it Susan Spann? Do you remember Susan Spann talking about this?
Yeah.
Because she had a similar strategy to you in the fact that she doesn't really talk about her book on social media. She, like, talks about things about her world that she writes about. She writes about,
gotcha.
I don't know, it was like 16th century Japan. And so she will go and take pictures of a temple. But she puts all the hashtags in, and she says that, you know, hashtag Asian, hashtag whatever it is, to do with temples. And that's one way that she definitely drives people to a Facebook page and a Twitter page that wouldn't normally, you know, who are interested in those things,
yeah,
but, you know, are all, then are interested in her book. So that might be something you think about, Sean.
Yeah, finding the readers.
I think it would be. I think I might, may or may not be going to edit my Facebook post after this.
Right.
Well, you know, you're actually a very popular genre. You picked a very popular genre of the, your writing, and so I can't see why, and a very exciting kind of, you know, if it's space, and all that kind of, people love all that kind of thing, so I definitely think adding hashtags will draw people in, will bring people to that, to your post, you know.
And I have to persuade you to give Twitter a chance, because, I mean, just talk to Suzanne about this, and me as well.
Oh, yeah, she's
Twitter queen,
yeah.
She is, and it works. Her strategy works to bring traffic to Amazon to buy your book, especially with the cover that you have. I think that growing that following... investing your time into Twitter and that market as well, and do some of the same kind of things that you're doing, but find the hashtags. Yeah. Do a Google search on hashtags for science fiction, the kind of fiction that you have. There's a giant geek market that loves that kind of stuff. So find out what hashtags they're searching, and they'll come to that book, and they will be your best fans.
That is one thing I've been lacking on, I guess. I've been focusing so much on Facebook, I've kind of let Twitter go, I guess. So I do need to get back onto that.
And the advantage of Facebook is that it's, you're reaching not just people who follow you. When you do the hashtags, you're getting everyone. And there's millions of people on Twitter. So your audience is huge compared to your small circle on Facebook. So you Facebook is really good for more like personal connections and getting, you know, hardcore fans and stuff. But Twitter is really good for broadening your brand and your reader base. So don't be scared. Jump right in and ask Suzanne. She'll tell you what you need to do.
Twitter.
Well, you know, what I love about Twitter is once you've got those connections, I mean, I think I get 150 to 200 people retweet my book every single week without me doing a thing.
Yeah.
They literally, because we have this, because we're all connecting with each other. And I mean, that's free marketing for me,
yes,
you know?
Exactly.
And like, you know, people, there is a correlation that we don't get as many sales right from Twitter, but I'm a great believer in that five, you know, is it the five times that you see something, you know, what's that, you know,
marketing? Yeah,
five to seven times. So if somebody says my book seven times, I'm more likely to buy it, even if it's not totally from Twitter.
Exactly.
It's that kind of organic marketing, you know, as
it
is really looking for.
Absolutely. And I think with your genre, that it especially can be extremely powerful.
Well, you did some pitch this week, KJ, and how many times was that retweeted, your post? You had a post?
I'm using your strategy that you discovered, Suzanne, and have, you know, it's the 2-1-1, two posts that are, you know, just looking for readers, and then one post that is a hard sell and one post that's a soft sell. And been working on this for a while, you know, mastering that, but it's huge. I can hardly keep up with how many people retweet my books and the other content. I need a clone to go in there and like do all the retweets and the thank yous and all that kind of stuff, but it's huge. It's how I sell all my books. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll definitely have to start utilizing it more.
Yes, work it, baby. Work it. All right.
But you haven't got enough to do right now, but everything you're doing sounds great.
Yes.
You'll just add whatever your repertoire, you know, what you're doing.
Yeah. And it'll keep building as I, you know, as the book builds and as I get more books and grow more as an author. So
yes.
It's just step one on a journey, you know?
Exactly. And that's, I mean, the building a Twitter following takes, you know, like mine, I have, I don't know, 18,000 on one account. That's been 4 years of working it like this. And it's as you get more, it grows quicker and more exponentially because you've got all those other people helping you grow it. So
it just
takes some work and it's a constant thing. It's definitely paying off though. I would highly recommend it. So, all right, let's switch heads, as Suzanne likes to say. Tell us what your writing process is. How do you set up your writing world? How do you have a schedule? Is there certain things I'm also curious about, you know, your novel was going to be one thing and you had this list and now it's something completely different. So how does that factor into all of that?
My process is ever being refined, but I'm a very scheduled person. I come from an athletic background. sound. So it's like rigid. You practice every day and you practice like you play. And there are days you're not going to feel like doing writing or doing, you know, exercise or that sort of thing, but you still got to do it if you want to be successful. So for me, you know, I wake up early. I wake up at 5:30 and I go and I work out until about 7:30 because that just gets my mind in shape. And then I write for about 2 hours every morning. And then after work, I write for about an hour and a half or something every night, or I use it for marketing or I use it for editing. Right. And I try to do that every day. Actually today and for the next week, I'm taking a break, but I'm about to jump into starting my editing on another book. But that's kind of my day-to-day schedule. As far as the book process goes, I write every first draft of my book by hand in a notebook.
This always scares me.
Are you kidding? I have the worst handwriting. That would be my total worst nightmare because I'd have amazing ideas and I couldn't read any of it. That's amazing.
Yeah, I've got pretty horrendous handwriting, but I've learned to decipher it after a little while.
Do you have shorthand? Do you like use the medical shorthand where you just have a couple letters and slashes?
No, I write it all out.
Gosh.
I've tried to write a book I've written actually one book by the computer, and it was just, I can't think, I can't have that creative process going when I'm staring at a computer.
Interesting.
And it's just so much more freeing when I'm writing by hand.
Interesting.
But the first drafts by hand, I type it up in the computer, and part of that is editing too. You know, I see a PowerPoint, I mark it down, you know, I need to come back to this, I need to change this, I'm seeing this repetition. That's part of the editing process. So I type it up, I set it aside for anywhere from 2 weeks to over a month. I think the second space opera I put away for probably 4 or 5 months.
Wow.
And then I came back to it. And you come back, the goal is to come back with fresh eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
So then I print it all out. And when I come back for the first editing, round of editing, I edit it all by hand, put all the changes in. Then I sit down and I read it all through my computer. I read it aloud. I try to make sure it works, and I can do that anywhere from 2 to 3 times. And then after that, I give it to my mom is one of my first readers because she doesn't usually read the genres. Actually doesn't read any of the genres I write in, but so she catches me, you know, she kind of gives me this realistic view. It's like, this doesn't make any sense to me, or she's not as willing to accept things in that genre, which is because it kind of gives me that reality check.
Yeah, that's really good to have someone like that, because they give you what any one of the millions of readers that might read it will come up with. They'll give, you know, that's what my husband does for me too. He's a very critical thinker, and he's like, this catches me. And I'm like,
exactly.
It catches you. It may not catch the rest of them, but if I fix it, that one and the other people that have that issue won't have that issue, and they'll keep staying to the
story. Right, it won't snag them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's good. So mom is a huge help. That's cute. I love it.
After her, it goes to a couple other people, just beta readers, friends I know, and then that's pretty much it. As far as what I write in actually two genres, I write YA, which is upper YA, which is what this book is, and then middle grade, or children's books. And I actually have written a few children's books. The one I'm about to start editing is another children's book. But writing in two genres really gives me that distance from kind of the work. So, you know, I write a YA science fiction, and then actually I go and I write the first draft of a middle grade fantasy. So they're similar yet vastly different, and it kind of gives me that clarity of mind to, I can switch back and forth from one to the other.
Yeah, yeah, and it keeps you fresh. No, I know what you mean.
It does. It absolutely does, yeah. And as far as ideas, the middle grade one I just wrote was actually just another idea that just came into my head, and it just, I can't explain where it comes from. I don't know how one idea takes precedence over the other. I think the most important thing about an idea is it sticks with you over weeks and months, because you know that way you know it's going to stay with you, and you're through the course of writing an entire book.
Right, and still be interested. Exactly.
Interested, yeah. But I also think that I don't write towards the market. I don't write books that I think I'm going to be able to sell. I write books that I would want to read as a reader. And I try not to follow the usual cliches of in that genre. And I just try to think of new approaches for kind of, I guess you'd say, unoriginal ideas or ideas that have been used before.
Right.
So
good. That's good. That's what you need, because there's a lot of science fiction that's already been done, a lot of fantasy that's already been done.
Yeah.
To rehash it is, from my view, kind of pointless to come up with something completely original. That's good stuff, man. People already like the genre, but they want something they've never thought of before. And it's hard to do because there's a lot of fiction out there, you know, in those genres.
Oh, there absolutely is. Yeah.
Well, good. It sounds like you have a really good strategy. You are more similar to Suzanne than me in terms of structure, just having this airtight structure of getting all your work done. That's something that I envy.
Oh, yeah.
Struggle
it throws
with.
Me off if, like, I, you know, miss a day of writing or something like that, it just throws the whole day off.
Yeah. Well, that's good, though, because that's how you're able to get all these books done. I definitely envy that. I have three kids and, you know, all these other things that keep me from being super structured.
People on the roof right now.
People on my roof. And it's not Santa, unfortunately. Yeah, well, this is cool. Okay, so I have one last question. I think you've mentioned it, but tell us what you're working on right now.
Well, on top of the third space opera, which I'm actually going to be setting aside for now, I was in the middle of the first draft of that, but I'm going to set it aside because I have this middle grade fantasy I want to get polished up and get ready to pitch early next year. And I think I use the tagline, I'm still kind of, you know, still kind of getting the marketing aspect of it, of how I pitch it in my head, but it's Percy Jackson meets Fablehaven. It's kind of this mix of cryptids, which are like Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, Chupacabra, all of them, and they're in our world, and they're kind of this thin veil between our world and their world, and there's this group of kids who have to keep them separate, and yeah, that's kind of the basic plot.
That sounds
good. So I'm trying to get that into polished shape.
Right, and that's just an idea stage, or are you actually writing a draft on that?
I'm on the first draft of that, so I haven't actually looked at it yet, but I'm sure if you hear a faint scream of horror, that's because I've started to look at it.
Now, tell me, how many words do you do for that type of novel? Is that less than like an adult novel?
So typically it is. I don't actually measure by word count on any of my books. I just write to what I kind of inherently feel the story should be, kind of an ending point. I try to keep within... At the editing stage, I try to keep in, okay, you know, I can't have a 150,000 word children's book or something that. This one's going to come out. It's a middle grade fantasy, and so it's going to have a little bit more world building than typical. I think it's going to probably end at about 75,000-80,000 words.
Wow, that is long. That's a big one.
It is long for a kid's book, but I was doing some research and I saw that, I mean, these are all, there's always exceptions.
Harry Potter.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and Percy Jackson was, I think, 90,000. Yeah. So,
all right. Wow, that's interesting.
So it's always good to be aware of the market and what the market will bear as far as that length. Yeah. But I think also if it's necessary to the story and you're able to maintain kids' attention through the story, then I think you'll be okay.
Yeah, and I think too, if you're using that as like a flagship for a series, that you need to do the world building and get that set so that when you do the next in the series, you've already got that established. So
exactly.
Very cool.
That's a complete sideline here. Probably at Skagit College right now, you can do a course in search of Bigfoot. Did you know that?
I totally believe that because ever since I started the kids book and started doing research, I can't not see Bigfoot stuff.
I can't believe it. Christopher, you know, says doing college courses right now, and I go, honey, you can do In Search of UFOs or In Search of Bigfoot. Oh, that's the classes I would be taking.
There you go.
How interesting would that be? I mean, the people that would go to that would be interested for me to write about.
Shoot, as a writer, it's like a gold mine for characters and content. Jeez, absolutely.
Why do you want to go do science? Boring stuff, you know? Go learn about the Loch Ness Monster.
Bigfoot. Yeah, we went to California this summer, and there's restaurants and gas stations, everything Bigfoot. It was pretty funny.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Middle of California. All right, well, should we do the lightning round, Suzanne?
Oh, yeah. We can do that. So the lightning round is, Sean, we're just going to ask you a short question. Well, I mean, we want short answers. I'm not sure what short question.
Okay.
You don't have to go, you know, my favorite drink is coffee because it's so brown, and I have my favorite mug.
Because it's so brown.
It's coffee or tea. So just keep it kind of short, you know. So if you can, we don't have to say, but it's the whole point of a lightning round is it just comes off the top of your head.
I just have to interrupt you. You obviously are not a coffee drinker. If you're describing it as just brown, is all you can come up with. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Brown. Okay.
I'm sorry. Found out.
Well, it's a joke, because when I do drink coffee, I drink decaf, non-fat, literally it's brown water. That's what I drink when I go out. It's like, just give me that brown water, that'll be so.
Sorry.
So I am, you're right, it's just brown. Okay, so here we go. They're pretty simple. What is your favorite band or artist?
Rise Against.
I've never heard of them. What type of band is that?
It's alternative rock. I mean, I like a lot of alternative rock, and it kind of sometimes border on screaming, but... They're pretty intense.
Left coast or right coast?
Oh, left coast.
love it over here. What is your
That's like a trick question.
totally to me too. What is your favorite writing spot?
Out of the house. Anywhere. Anywhere out of the house.
Anywhere.
Interesting.
In the field in Wyoming?
I may or may not have done that, yes.
I bet you did.
Coffee shop. I've written in the woods. I've written on airplane. I mean, anywhere where I like to move, I like to travel. And that's anywhere cool. That's a new location, a new sensation, that's kind of where I like to write because it just helps me with the ideas.
Cool.
Wow, that's so cool. Are you a pantser or a plotter?
Both. I plot just enough to know where I'm going with the story, and then I let the organic process take over.
He's a plunther.
What do you call it, a plunther?
Plunther.
Plunther.
You're one of those. If you could be transported back in time, where would you go?
Oh my gosh. If I had to, if I was allowed to come back, I would go back to when the Tyrannosaurus Rex walked the Earth.
Oh,
wow.
That's her.
I think that's pretty awesome.
We don't think we've ever had that one before, have we?
No, I don't think so.
And why would that? Wouldn't you be eaten by one? Why would you want to do that?
Oh, I'm too savvy to get eaten by one.
Too savvy. So you are, what's his name, Christopher Platt, or whatever his name is.
If you had a superpower, what would you want it to be?
The ability to materialize any object I wanted by simply thinking about it.
Oh.
We've never had that one before
You're
either.
So original. I love it.
Oh, that's like chocolate, and there it is. I'd be so fat
if I could do that.
Wow, that's kind of cool. Who inspires you? Well, I should say who or what?
I think there are many people that inspire me in many different ways. I mean, my parents inspire me because they work hard and they have, you know, they stick to their values and they stick to who they are. And the friends I'm around, they all have different qualities to them that all influence me. So I can't really think of one person, I guess.
You're inspired by the people around you. A lot of people are.
Yeah. I'm a product of the people I'm surrounded by.
Which proves that we should surround ourselves with the right people.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's true.
Because I like those moments when you're writing organically, you're just writing whatever comes to mind, and it's that kind of high you get when you just think of the next, what you think at the time. It's a great idea, and you just move from there. It's just, there's nothing better than just having an epiphany and an idea and putting it down on paper. I don't know.
I totally agree with you. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. And I love that because it's like the story takes over. You know, it's like you're just this vessel and suddenly something comes to you that you had no idea you could even think up. And that's
exactly
because you feel like you're in some sort of partnership with your creativity, which is for you in some way.
That's the moments I think we all strive for.
Yeah.
Totally is. One thing you wish you'd been told about being a writer.
To not always follow the rules. Ooh. To to understand what the rules are of writing, then know how to break them. And know how to break them well in order to write, you know, the best story you possibly can.
Cool.
That's good. And I think for somebody like you who's so organized and so structured, do you find that a challenge or does that come pretty easy to you?
It used to come as a challenge, but now it comes pretty easy because now I understand, you know, with every book I write and every book I read on writing and working with authors and working as an editor and agent, I understand kind of the parameters I'm allowed to step outside and how to do that. And, you know, there's some things that people say in writing, you can't ever do this. And I'm not a big fan of that. I think any time somebody tells you can't do something, you'll always find a bestseller that's done it.
Ha.
Right. Yeah.
Love it.
So I think learn the rules, then learn how to break them.
Yeah. Terry and Susan wrote that book, right?
Just believing, you know, this is the best way for me to tell the story. Even if it just fit in this little box that everybody wanted to fit in. Which book do you wish you had written?
I don't know, actually.
That's a fair answer.
Let me ask you a different question. Is there a book you could read every year?
Yes. Something Wicked This Way Comes by Ray Bradbury.
Oh,
Ray Bradbury. Yeah. Now, you like Ray Bradbury, right, KJ?
Yes. Science fiction. Yeah. That's a classic author.
So that's it. I mean, that's all the questions I have. Anything else you want to say, Cage?
No. This has been a lot of fun, though. I've loved getting to know you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. It's been great.
And I think I don't know you real well, but we've had a lot of conversations. And I learned a lot about you today that I didn't know, which is always so cool about doing this.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on our program, Sean. This has been a lot of fun. I hope you keep in touch as your book launches and, you know, allow us to help you. We've got lots of Twitter, so if you need us to tweet you out or whatever, please let us know.
Absolutely, yeah. I really appreciate you having me on here, and thanks for all the great questions. So, I'll talk to you guys soon, hopefully.
Thank you for joining us on Blondie and the Brit. Join us next week when we'll have Best of Blondie and the Brit and a very funny interview with Sharon Anderson.
You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com.